Okay, so we start Perigyud with the visit of Malkut Shimon. Like I said, the Gemara claims it isn't the queen of Sheba, it's the kingdom, so it's the king. And we'll see the reason the Gemara really wants to do that is because they seem to become close, and all types of legends arise around this story. But Malkut Shomad et Shema Shlomo l'Shema Adonai v'Tavo l'Nasoto b'Chidod. So the queen of Sheba hears the reputation of Shlomo for God, and she comes to test him with riddles. So this L'shem Hashem is a bit hard to parse. And what does it mean that she hears that, you know, L'shem Hashem? But it seems like some, you know, either she hears that the wisdom he got was from God, because she heard about the dream, right, that he was granted wisdom. Something like that. Also, that he, you know, presumably it's related to the fact that he uses his wisdom partially to build the Beit HaMikdash. And she comes to test him with riddles. Now, it's not totally clear what exactly that means, b'chidot. So the Midrash takes that literally. B'chidot is riddles, and it plays off of it with the beginning of Mishle. Right, that right. Mishle begins, right, since Mishle is ascribed to Shlomo, so, and she comes and tests him. Bechidot, so the opening midrash on Mishle, they right tie them together, right, the sixth pasuk in Mishle is lehavin mashalu melitza divrei chachamim vechidotam. So the Midrash equates that this is what's going on, is that one of the signs of wisdom is the ability to understand these riddles. And then many different Midrashim suggest, well, what were these riddles that she was asking him? So if you just look at the first Midrash and Mishle, they raise a few. So for example, they suggest that she asked him, right, she said, Shamati alecha v'amachudcha v'achachmatcha. Right, she said, I heard about you. I've heard you really wise. If I ask you something, will you answer? He said, yeah, but that's because God gives wisdom. So she said, okay. Amar lo, mahin shiv'a yotzin v'tish'a nechnasin u'shnayim mozgin v'echad shoteh. Right, what is the seven that go out, the nine who come in, the two who pour, and the one who drinks? And so what is that? So he said, oh, I know what that is. Amar la, bifadai shivai mei nida yotzin. Right, 7 days of nida. So husband and wife separate. But then once they get together, tishayar chei leida nichnasin. That can cause, right, bring about conception, which has 9 months of pregnancy, shnei dadim mozgim, and then the child will nurse, va'yelet shoten, there'll be one child nursing. Amar lo, chachom gadol ata, she said, you are brilliant. Then she asks him another question, neve'elef tinoket bekoma achat uviksut echad. She brings some babies, all in identical clothing. And she says, okay, tell me, which ones are boys, and which ones are girls? So he brings nuts, and he throws them on the floor. The males took the food in their clothes, like wrapped it in their clothes, and the girls took it in their with their head wrap. And he said, "Those are the boys are wearing this." I don't know what any of this means, but they go through all of these. So what is exactly the point of all of these? So one possibility is what the Malbim suggests. The Malbim says what she was impressed with, as we'll see, is she saw that he was practical, right? He was a builder. He built an empire. He was a pragmatic person. Often you have two types of people in this world, two types of smart people. Right? A lot of people aren't smart, but smart people break down into the engineers and the theoretical scientists, right? The people who are good at getting things done, and the people who are, you know, in their head, they're good at philosophy, solving these problems, but they can't do anything practically. She knew that he was practical. He was building empires.
He didn't.
Well, Fine, but it's saying he's a good politician, right? Meaning he may himself not be, but she knows he has practical political wisdom. She was asking him riddles to see if he was also a theoretician. That was what she wanted. She wanted to see someone who could do both. Something interesting to note about the Mishalim here is that, and this is true not as of these, but they continue, is each of the Mishalim that the Midrash ascribes has some sexual connotation to it, right? Either it's talking about the difference between males and females, or talking about pregnancy. I assume that's because Chazal are trying to intimate that there's a certain level, intimacy here, right? That she's asking riddles, not just, right, as we see, a rapport develops between them, and they're hinting at that, right? That it was you know, intellectual banter, right, which has a certain sort of sexual, you know, charge to it. Amos Chacham suggests something totally different, but for that we're going to have to, I'll set it out now, but we'll prove it as we go through the psukim. He suggests that Chidotam has nothing to do with this at all. And it's not riddles. It's Chida also just means a thorny problem. And she thinks what she came for was political advice. Right? She came, how would you deal with this political situation, this problem? And he offered political advice, and that was what impressed her, and we'll see why he thinks this. So it continues. V'atavo Yerushalayim b'chayil, kaved ma'od malim, nosim b'samim v'zahav rav ma'od, v'even yikarav, v'atavo Shlomo v'daber elav v'kol asher hayayim levava. She comes to Yerushalayim with an army and with camels carrying spices and a tremendous amount of gold and jewels. And she comes and she speaks to him everything that she was thinking about, everything, kol asher hayayim levava. Anything on her mind? And anything she wanted to know, Shlomo could tell her. And she saw all his wisdom and the house that he built. And this is where the Malbim says it, right? That she's impressed by two things: you're smart and you're practical. And that impressed her. And she saw his wealth. She saw the food on his table, his servants, his officers, their clothing, everything, the karbanot that he would bring. She was out of breath. Right? It took her breath away, literally, right? That's what the phrase means. Lo yaba od ruach. She was just amazed. She didn't know what to do with herself. But Tomer al Melech, emeraya davar shamati varzi al dvarech aval chochmatecha. It's true what I heard about you in my land, about what you've done and your wisdom. Vulohem anti lidvarim, adasher bati, vaterenainai, vinelu godly hachetzi. Hosafta chochmavatovel, ashmoasher shamati. I didn't believe it until I saw it with my own eyes. And now I come, and I see they didn't tell me half of what you've great, of how great you are, your wisdom. And everything I heard was barely the tip of the iceberg. Ashrei anashecha, ashrei avadecha ela, omdim lefanecha tamid, ashamim et chochmatecha. So fortunate are your servants who hear your wisdom all the time. Yehi Adonai lecha baruch, asher chafetz becha lesitcha l'Yisrael, ba'avad Adonai Yisrael le'olam, v'simcha le'melech lasot mishpat utztaka. And blessed is God who gave you this to make you the king, because he loved the Jewish people forever, and he made you king, lasod tzedakah u'mishpat, to carry out justice. And this is going back to Shlomo's opening thing, right? I want wisdom to be able to judge. And that's what she sees. Nerviel ben Nun likes pointing out that this is really the climactic moment of, like, Jewish history. Because if you remember in Shlomo's tefillah, Shlomo said the goal of the Beit HaMikdash is not just for Jews. The goal of the Beit HaMikdash is to provide a place where nations are going to come and be impressed by God. The Messianic era is supposed to be a time when we have a model nation, that people come, are impressed by our power and our wealth and our wisdom, so that they come and see the Beit HaMikdash and realize that it's all from God, so that we can explain to them our message. And Shlomo, who becomes the prototype of Mashiach in later Nevuot, succeeds, right? That after he has brought the Jewish people to build the Beit HaMikdash, here this Queen of Sheba comes. And as she said, Hi Hashem Elokecha Baruch, she understands that it's from God. It's not just she realizes Shlomo is smart and Shlomo is powerful, but she really internalizes that it's from Hashem, and that really is the climactic moment in Jewish history. Now, this story, like I said, creates all types of myths around it. Probably the most developed myth around this, and there's hundreds of myths that have developed of it. This is a Ethiopian myth, is that they actually got married and had a child. And the child became the king of Ethiopia, named Menelik. And the Ethiopian Jews, the reason they think they're Jewish is they claim that they are descendants of Menelik, right, of the son of Shlomo. And the Ethiopian king monarchies, apparently, many of them claim descent from Menelik. Right? This is a very old, very, very, very old, like several thousand-year-old myth, that's recorded in Jewish sources, in Ethiopian sources, in Christian sources, they all have this record. You can go online, you can Google Menelik. There's a Wikipedia page, but you can also, there are all these documents of every component of the myth, and there are even, in some of these myths, he actually steals the Aron or some of the Kalim from the Beit HaMikdash and brings it to Ethiopia so he can build his own temple, and Shlomo tries to stop him, but he can't. Like, there's all types of...
Is there any evidence for this?
No. These are the oldest, but this is like a tremendously old myth.
Is there any genetic...
I have absolutely... I mean, how are we going to know? Like, how are we going to know that it's...
Because the coin
gene...
No,
what?
But sometimes
I mean, they claim they are Jewish. They claim.
Can't be.
I mean,
your mom's not
Jewish. Fine. She converted. I don't know. You know, to take whatever. I don't. You know, like I said, there are many versions of this myth, but the common denominator to all of them is that she. Well, part of what they see, and this is why they think they're Jewish, right? They think that the Malkut Shva accepted Judaism when she said she was recognizing God, that she converted and married Shlomo, and then they had Menelik. They all come down to this Menelik, right?
It's
this Menelik.
It's not really a name that fits to Tanakh or to Shlomo's kids.
Menelik?
Yes.
Or yeah, not exactly.
It's like a Polish Jew.
Even the era.
Yeah, I don't know. This is. You can look it up. It's Menelik. It is. And they, to this day, they think that they are the. That they are the descendants of Menelik. It really is quite a. I mean, if you read through it, like, it's fascinating, different myths that have emerged around this, but this is what they think happens in this moment. Vatitein lamelach me'av esrim kikar zahav uvisamim harbe me'od ve'evin yikara lo va'kavosem ahu od larov asher nadam achud shva lamelach Shlomo. And she gives Shlomo 120 talents of gold, which is a tremendous amount of gold, and spices, and jewels, right, which they don't even count, right? So clearly a lot. That's what she gave to Shlomo. The gam oni chiram asher nasa zahav me'ofir hevi me'ofir atzel mogim harbe me'od ve'even yikara. And then you get this weird intrusion. Oh, and by the way, chiram said boats, right? Oni, like oniyot, laden with gold, and atzel mogim. It's not totally clear what that is, but almog in modern Hebrew, and this may be what it actually means, in that is coral.
Yes.
Right? So it may still mean that in biblical Hebrew. And jewels. So this is where Amos Chacham jumps in. And he says, no, you know what the chidot are? He said, well, why? Right, to answer that question, he adds another question. Why in the middle of the story of Malkut Shva does Chiram suddenly parachute in? And why is Chiram throwing gold at Shlomo and spices? It's really weird, especially since in the last chapter we saw that Chiram wasn't so happy with Shlomo. Right? Shlomo had given him 20 cities and Chiram didn't like it. And suddenly we don't hear anything happening.
This might have been earlier.
So it could have been. But what he says, which is very plausible, and a lot of people at this point have been convinced by his argument, is that if you remember before, why did Shlomo really enter with Chiram? Because they, in addition to their local...
needed the builders.
So in addition to the local builders, they also were important trade partners. But if you think of the map, Israel has always been an important trade point because it connected Africa to the rest of Mesopotamia. Malkut Shva, if she's coming up, and she's, right, presumably she didn't just come for political problems. She's coming for political problems. Usually you come for your own political problems. What he assumes is that she was afraid that Shlomo has this strong alliance with Tzor, who's the north of Israel, and if they want to, they can set up a block, right, a blockade, a trade blockade, and, you know, have taxes.
She was on the west side.
She's like southwest. Oh, she's so Teman.
Here it's yeah.
So Teman. Right. I mean, you still have to go.
He does say Eretz Teman.
Yeah.
But this is the west.
Meaning it's
southwest.
Meaning to get in. I mean, you still have to go through Israel to get to. If you're going through, you know, Africa, you're going up. And she's coming to negotiate with Shlomo. Right. She's coming to make sure that she remains an important trade partner. He doesn't close the markets to those in Mitzrayim and in Shva and Kush and all those lands. The African market doesn't get closed off or taxed or blockaded from the north, from Mesopotamia. So what does she do? She comes and she gives him bribes. Well, not bribes, you know that's a tribute. Yes. A tremendous amount. And suddenly this is a problem because Tzor is extremely powerful. But who's more powerful is Mitzrayim. And Mitzrayim already has, Shlomo already has a good relationship with Mitzrayim. But Paro is his wife. Yeah. That was his first one. And we know that Paro is coming and conquering cities and giving to him his presence. Like, they have a working political relationship. And so Amos Chacham thinks, what are the Chidotam? She's coming to see, does he understand the political situation? And will he accept her as a primary partner, right? And not allow Tzor to dictate the politics in the region. And he does, right? He makes a deal with her. And Tzor realizes what's happening. And suddenly Tzor, who before thought they had the upper hand, and who had who could say to Shlomo, oh, I don't like what you gave me, suddenly changes his tune and comes back. Because if you look at what he gives the exact same thing that she does. Gold, right? It's basically parallel. Gold, jewels, and then instead of spices, she gives coral, because he's a seafaring nation, so he can bring that. But basically, he's trying to copy.
Yes, trees, not coral.
Right, so Almogim. Right, so Almogim is in modern Hebrew is coral. It could be some other. Right, so here they suggest that it might be more like aloe, right? More like some aromatic plant. But whatever type of aromatic plant it is, right? You parachute in Hiram, and in the middle of the discussion, where it seems like he's being influenced by Malkut Shva, he comes, the person who was angry just a little bit before at Shlomo, suddenly is willing to throw money at Shlomo because he realizes the political tide is turning, and Shlomo may be making a brit with the south instead of the north, right? With Africa instead of Tzor. And you know, the truth is that the amount that he gives, we heard later, was actually, you know, the same amount. So this is Amos Chacham's theory here, that Malchut Shva is coming to make a political alliance, and Hiram is trying to maintain the political alliance, bring his power. But it seems like in the end of the day, Shlomo, as you continue, you see, Vayas HaMelech Ratzei Almogim Misad Levet Adonai Levet HaMelech Yinor Nevalim LaSharim Lo Vachein Al Zemogim Lo Nadayim Azeh. So presumably this isn't coral here, because he's using it to make instruments, right? He's making instruments with it for the Beit HaMikdash, and these were the best, you know, whatever exactly these trees are. VaMelech Shlomo Natan L'Malkut Shva Kol Chavtza, but the king gave the Queen of Sheba everything she wanted. And it seems, as Amos Chacham points out, he's contrasting it. Like, he's trying to maintain the upper hand in it. Now, Shlomo doesn't break his covenant per se, except you never hear from him again. So he definitely either broke his covenant, or he moves to a lower level covenant where his primary allies become those in the south, become those in Africa, Shva and Mitzrayim. And Tzor becomes downgraded. And that's what you really get. There are different versions of this, right? Either some think that Shva is trying to replace Tzor. I saw one person suggest that maybe he's not trying to replace Tzor. This is really a three-way agreement where they're trying to all work together. Like, now they're bribing Shlomo to make like one pact. Whatever it is, it seems like there's some sort of political game going on here. And Shlomo gives Shva whatever she wants. And she goes home. Okay. Vayhi mishkal hazahav asher ba l'shlomo b'shana achad shesh meot shishim v'shesh kikar zahav. Every year he gets 666 talents of gold from tribute. Now, one person I was listening to in a shir suggested that this becomes the source for 666 being the number of the devil. Right, there's like part of mythology is that it's the number of the devil, because this is the beginning of his downfall. Is that the greed that Shlomo shows here is the beginning of his downfall? I don't know if that's true. That someone suggested it. I was listening, and they said we have no evidence for this except that it happens to be the number of the devil. Okay, I don't know what that means, but fine. And this is in addition to all the business that's going on. This is just the official government tribute that he gets. So Shlomo makes with this, he makes everything out of Zahav Shachut. So Zahav Shachut is pure gold. It's like 24 karat, essentially. Not alloys, but pure gold. So he uses them to make what's it called? Shields. Right? He makes shields out of this gold.
Using gold to make shields out of pure gold? That sounds
that's
heavy.
So it's actually, it's more than it's just heavy. It's a bit weird to use it because gold, pure gold is also soft. Right?
And you use it for the whole body. That's what he said.
Right, I mean, you look at it, right? This is what they look like, right? The Tzinah Mitzri, like these full body shields, right? Like this.
It's called a goof.
Yeah. And so it's first of all, it's weird. Because gold is soft. It's not actually a good thing to use. It's also phenomenally expensive. So I was listening to Shirbei Rai Schwartz, Ezra Schwartz, where he suggests, and I think he's probably right, the part of it is that, Shlomo doesn't really have war, right? He has peace. His army is a standing army. It's an honor guard. For an honor guard, right, it makes sense, right? You know, it's not necessarily practical, right? You don't.
It looks good.
It looks amazing, right? Like, oh my God, I can waste money. It's like the way you see that people who are really rich and want to show off their wealth will purposely spend money on things that are ridiculous. So it's like, here, this isn't even practical. It would be much more practical if I used cheaper metal, which was stronger, but I'm going to use the most expensive, least practical, full body shield made of soft gold. So it could just be this is part of his making this honor guard and showing off his wealth. And then we get to the next story with Shlomo that also has a million legends that have built around it, which is the throne of Shlomo. He also makes this incredible throne of ivory, which also, by the way, implies that he has trade going from Africa. Right? That sort of implies it pretty strongly, right? That, I mean, unless...
Difference.
Right, I mean, ivory is right. That, I mean, that's where ivory is coming from, and he overlays it with refined gold. Sheish ma'alot lakisei v'rosh agol lakisei macharav yadot mizel makom hashavet shneim arayodom dot etzel hayadot. So six steps leading up to the throne, and the throne had a back with a rounded top and arms on either side, with two lions beside the arms. Ushneim asar arayim omdim sham al sheish ma'alot mizel mizel. So there were two lions beside the arms, and then another 12 lions, meaning on the six steps, so one on each side of it, these golden lion statues. There was never a throne like this in all of the world. And again, the Midrashim build on this tremendously. They argue that these were magical, or basically mechanical lions that would come to life and would bite people who tried to go up there, and tell all types of stories that Nebuchadnezzar, when he came to Yerushalayim, tried to use it and it bit him. Paro tried to come and it bit him and made him lame, and that's why they say Paro Necho is called Necho, which means lame, because he's lame because he tried to co-opt his throne and it bit him. And Achashverosh tried and the lions attacked him, and And then the Midrashim say that that he wanted to sit on it, so Achashverosh built an exact replica because he couldn't sit on Shlomo, because the lions were coming alive. It's again one of these things that the Midrashim really build on. The simple shot is just that he had this, you know, phenomenally fancy throne to show off his wealth. And everything else is gold also. Kolklei mashkeh melech Shlomo zahav. Kolklei bet yar halvanon zahav. Sagur. Ein kesev lo nechshav bimei Shlomo limi'uma. Everything, his cups were of gold, his utensils of gold, silver didn't count for anything. Now there is another pasuk that implies that silver counted for something, but it was almost nothing. So Chazal say, well, was silver nothing, or was it almost nothing? And they say, well, it depends. Before he married Bat Paro, it was nothing. Once he married Bat Paro, and he was a little bit less righteous, so he's still wealthy, but silver was worth something. But the point is, he's overwhelmingly wealthy. Kianit Tarshish Lamelech Bayam im ani chiram achad l'shalosh anim tavo ani Tarshish noseit l'tav achesev shen habim v'kofim edvitukiyim. For the king had a Tarshish fleet along with the Chiram's fleet, and every 3 years it would come in bearing gold and silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks. Right, he's bringing every exotic thing from around the world. This Chiram is still mentioned here, not in a speaking role, but his fleet is still part of the story. Vaygdal Hamelech Shlomo mikol malchei aretz laosher ulochochma. So Shlomo was excelled beyond any king on earth in wealth and wisdom. V'chol aretz mivakshim epinei Shlomo l'shmon chochma toyer shenatanim Elohim bilibo. And everyone wanted to hear the wisdom that God had given in his heart. V'heima mivim ish min chato klei chesev klei zahav u slamot v'neshek. Slamot, is that right?
He's dyslexic, who wrote it.
Yeah, okay, anyways. Uslamot, Vineshek, Upsamim, Susim, Fradim, Dvarshana, Vashana. Right, they come and they bring gold and silver and robes and weapons and spices and horses and mules. Right, everyone is coming for advice, presumably on political things, right? It's not just, oh, you're smart, let me give you money. Right, presumably he's giving out advice, he's acting as an arbiter. Vayesov Shlomo Rechev Uparashim Vayilo Elef Varbameot Rechev Ushnemasar Elef Parashim Vayenchem Bare Rechev Amamach Ushalayim. And he assembled chariots and horses. He had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horses, which he stationed in the stables, or in the stable cities, really, in the chariot cities, and in Yerushalayim. V'itena melech et hakesef v'Yerushalayim ka'avanim v'et harazim natan ka'shikmim asher bashvela larov. And he made silver as plentiful as stones, right? So this is the pasuk that Chazal point to. Well, here it sounds like silver is worth something. So that's what they say. Yeah, at first it was worth nothing, and then it became worth something. And then there were the cedars, and cedars were as plentiful as sycamores, right? Cedars are a much more expensive tree than sycamores. And his horses were come Mitzrayim, from Mitzrayim and from Kaveh, and he would buy them at a fixed price. Now here is where Chazal jump, and they say, right, you're not allowed to have too many horses because you might go back to Mitzrayim, right? So the Navi is throwing in your face that not only did he, right, the big three commands that he has is don't have too much money, don't have too many horses, because you might go to Mitzrayim, and don't have too many wives, he might leave you astray. And he gets too many horses and goes back to Egypt. He gets too many wives, and he's led to Avodah Zarah, or there, Avodah Zarah, we'll say whatever, in the next parak, and he has too much gold. Now, the truth is, in the Yerushalmi says, yeah, you see that he violated all three commands. He had too much money, too many wives, and too many horses. In the Bavli, the Bavli says, no, he had too many horses and too many wives and doesn't mention anything about money. So the Yad Ramah suggests that maybe it's because there's no prohibition to get money from tribute. It's only a prohibition to raise that money through taxes. But the simple pshat, I think, is like the Yerushalmi, that he violated all three. Now, the way the Gemara says it is that he thought that he was smart enough that he could withstand the temptations of gold and power and his wives, and turned out he could not. But whatever it is, it seems the simple pshat of the psukim is that, yeah, the Navi is going out of his way to tell you that Shlomo violated the three commands that he was supposed to have as king. And a chariot would come from Mitzrayim. He would pay 600 shekels of silver, and a horse at 150, and then they were imported to all the kings of the Chittim and the kings of Aram. So this parak, right, brings together a lot of sort of central themes, right? First of all, there's the Malkut Shva thing, where that's really the culmination of his vision of bringing the other nations, and they're all coming to see the wisdom, again, that Hashem had put in his heart, which is, that's the goal, right, to have Yerushalayim, to have the society where people respect the godliness of it. On the other hand, you see Shlomo's failure in the three important levels, where his wisdom, as Chazal take it, leads him astray, because he thinks he can handle the temptation, and he can't, not of the money, or of the wives, or of the army. And then, as Amos Chacham points out, there seems to be a lot of politics going on here also, where this power and this wealth, you know, the tribute isn't just because he's smart. It's clear that he's powerful. And part of it, as you see, is that the two main trade, the people on the two sides of the trade route are competing for his loyalties, which would explain why he's getting this type of tribute. Because he's not just someone who's smart, but he's someone who uses that politically and has a tremendous amount of control. And people are providing him with all of these goods. So that's Perek Yud. And then Yud Aleph is the end of the story. Is the end of Shlomo. Yud Aleph is the end of Shlomo, and then we move to Rechavam. So.